Hello, Gamecock fans. This is JC Sherbert here with a big Spurs special coffee on break, whatever we're calling it. I gotta nail that down, man. That's gotta be disconcerting. I wanted to pop in. I hope you're having a happy 4th of July weekend. It is Sunday, July 5th, the year of our Lord 2026, and we're doubling up today. Because I wanted to talk a little bit about Jaden Brody, who committed on the 4th of July. Very nice announcement at his home with his family. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, this kid's announcing on the 4th of July. Great. But then you see why. And you see, well, it's because, family's going to be over there. And, fundamentally, I support that. I'm here for it. It doesn't matter that, I didn't, kind of stuck around for it. Didn't really get into many activities yesterday. Did have a nice time with my wife's family and my mother-in-law's Thai friends. They had a cookout at their temple, and I got to go. They grilled assorted meats, and it was delicious. And I can tell you this one thing about Thai Americans: they're very happy to be at this country. My wife wouldn't let me wear my sleeveless American flag, kind of cut-off shirt, right? Because she's like, "Oh, you wouldn't wear that to church, would you?" I was like, "But oh, if it was a cookout, maybe." And I got there, and these people are dressed like George Washington and have hot dogs on their shirt and American flag top hats. I mean, I was like, are you serious? I'm sitting there dressed in a polo, like I'm going to the Carolina Cup, and everybody else is in the spirit, and I look a little unpatriotic, right? So anyway, that happened. But I had a nice 4th of July. Anyway, back to Jaden Brody. 6 foot two and a half, 230 pound edge. If you're looking for a size comparison, if you look in the Rivals database, he's 6'2", 220. My understanding is he's a little bigger than that. He's growing. Looks that way when you see some up close film and photos of him as well. And the people that have seen him in person believe that too. He's got great length, probably about the size of Anthony Addison, who is now 6'3", 235, and will probably be in the rotation this year. And the word I got was when they got him in camp, when you watch the film, it maybe doesn't jump out at you as much as it should, or as much as you think for an SEC level Southeastern Conference edge player. But when they got him in camp, that was a game changer. And sometimes that happens. With the way film is put together and stuff, it's not rare. I mean, people say the film doesn't lie, and it doesn't. That's very true. But there are some times where, maybe it doesn't all what the prospect's all about doesn't show up. And you look at the staff and their camp evaluations, and they're batting pretty well. Now, Deion Barnes is the edge coach, and he's new, so he's a different style of evaluation. But, Nick Emenwore was a camp eval, right? That's a famous. Most recent example, O'Donnell Fortune was a camp eval under the Muschamp staff. If you think about that, Tristan Lewis was a camp eval. Sometimes camp can make you miss too. Brandon Cisse was a camp eval that they passed on, and then they got him back. So it works both ways. But what I was told about it was it's just so helpful when you get to see how is this guy coached. How does he interact? What can he do athletically? What's his qu how quick is he? Really, because on film, you're playing against different levels of competition. I mean, I almost felt bad that I loved the Jackson Ross film, the three-star linebacker commit from Hammond, but I almost felt bad that every time I said something good, there was a caveat. Well, it's not good competition. I hated that. I felt like a jerk because Jackson Ross actually shows some things on film that I think will be irrelevant to level of competition. The more I watch him, the more I'm like, that guy could not only be good, he could be really good. Plus, I know his dad was a high level college athlete, and so those guys don't, they don't bust. And Jackson Ross isn't scared to hit and all that. But this isn't about Jackson Ross. We've done a podcast on him. It's about Jaden Brody. But on film, sometimes different levels of competition. You don't know who they're playing against. So how quick really is he? What's his first step like? On film, if he doesn't really show it, what was kind of going on in the game? There's all these things. And so you have to kind of blend. It's a nice blend. Everybody always asks me, and I'm not I've never worked in college football, but so this is more from a media and a ranking standpoint to communicate to you guys, but I have experience doing it. Certainly made my, if I'd never been right, that'd have been an issue. You should never listen to me about anything. Maybe you shouldn't listen to me at all about anything now, but I got some right, probably about 60%, but like everybody else. But what I like to do is take everything. People are like, well, what is it? Is it offers? Is it just film? Do you go watch the games? Do you know, what is this, that, and it's everything. You know, is it grades sometimes? Because we had to, the kid wouldn't qualify. You don't hear about non-qualifiers anymore, by the way. They just don't even get any looks at all because of the portal. You know, it's like, oh, well, sorry, you know. But yeah, so you look at it that way, and I always said it's everything. I don't really emphasize one thing over the other. But in the camp setting, what you could do is fact check what you see. On film, you can fact check what you see in camp because on film, that's in pads. You know, in a camp setting, that's in a camp setting. That's not really football. 7-on-7 and O-line, D-line challenge. So you can get, they're all valuable, right? So in the case of Brody, you know, maybe you watch the film and it's like, well, you know, it's just like, I just want to see, you know, it's not Fred Ard's level film, you know, it's not KJ Green level, it's not Julian Walker level. Then there's the size thing. So what you want to do is see him in person and evaluate him. And the staff checked him out and loved him. And again, in a positive direction, that's good. You got to trust your eyes, right? And so he came to camp and killed it. You know, Georgia Tech was another school that was in the mix for him. I think that that may have been one of the schools where he wanted to go. Virginia Tech obviously wanted him. NC State wanted him. Roseville, North Carolina is right there in Raleigh. Auburn had an offer out to him at one point. So he was getting offers. You know, visited Carolina, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, and NC State. Did not take an official visit anywhere. I don't think. No. Committed on July 4th. I think he just came in. Or no, did he visit? I'll have to kind of look into that. Let me look at all the visits real quick. Pull it up here on the hand. We got this great visit tracker on Rivals.com, by the way. Check it out. So his only official was to Virginia Tech on June 19th. So, you know, Virginia Tech, James Franklin recruiting, and he's a Virginia Tech, historically a Virginia Tech style defensive lineman. And of course, Brent Pry, the former head coach there, he's one of two fired head coaches to now be defensive coordinators at their school. He stayed on under Franklin, is going to coordinate the defense. It's kind of the same Hokies defense type of deal that, you know, bubbling out of the Bud Foster era. In some ways, it's kind of the background with Coach Franklin and all that. But he kind of fits that mold. You know, NC State, obviously, he hadn't been to NC State since August 28th, but, you know, a light visit schedule, but he came to Carolina and camped and got the offer. Deion Barnes really liked him. Is he a guy that can make an impact year one? I would not put that, write that down. I think that he's a developmental guy, which, you know, you look at South Carolina and their edge room. There's some guys like Julian Walker and Dylan Stewart that can step in right away. Then there's some guys like Anthony Addison that will be ready to go in year two. Desmond Umezulu, who's now at Alabama, you know, he was going to take a while, and he was a blue chip guy. You know, Brian Thomas Jr. actually got, and maybe some, it may have been a little bit because of depth at the time, but he played a lot younger and ended up having a really productive senior year. You know, Brody's probably a little bit more like Brian Thomas Jr., you know, that kind of guy. And not just because he's undersized, it's his get off and quick hands and things like that. So, you know, you kind of mash everything together as far as the outlook. I think year one, you know, special teams, something like that. Jaquavius Dodd is a player that South Carolina has that they love, that you got to bring him along. So edge sometimes is a nice blend. And then of course that's a position where you're always going to be in the market for the pass rushers from the portal and edges from the portal and things like that. So that's a special high level elite position, right? You have players that are elite, you have positions that are elite: corner, edge, D tackle, O tackle. Not in that order, not in that order. And obviously quarterback would be number one. Those are all positions where it's everybody wants them, everybody needs them. You get what you can. It's like the secret of NIMH when the big rat, the evil rat Jenner said, "Take what you can when you can." That's the approach at this position. Really like the fact that he's from North Carolina. And just quickly, we'll go through this. A few years ago, a few cycles ago, Mack Brown was still at UNC. They were getting a lot. North Carolina kids historically do like to leave the state. It's a state with almost 12 million people in it, where all the football playing schools, number one, none of them are in the SEC or the Big Ten for that matter. And number two, you got Wake and Duke, private school, that's a little different. And then you got NC State, which football school, all that, but they've kind of always kind of been in the shadows of the Tar Heels because it's such a big brand. They call it the University of North Carolina. Although, if you look at the history, NC State's actually a branch campus of Chapel Hill, and Chapel Hill's a branch campus of NC State. It's all one university system up there, technically. But Chapel Hill, when they go, the kids do stay home from the state of North Carolina. Mack did a good job of that, but that he's gone. You got a pro coach and a, and look, I'm not saying this guy sniffs glue, right? Literally, it's a figure of speech. But when somebody's kind of, you're scratching your head going, "What are you doing?" I call it a crazy glue sniffer approach. You said, and Lombardi, their GM there, they signed 40 something high school guys last year, and there are not a lot of them from in the state. So my point in saying all that is, while North Carolina kids leave the state frequently, and you look, they do. I mean, there's no doubt about that at all. Then, but right now it's wide open. I mean, because there's really nobody staying in state at this point. It's just kind of it's bad. I mean, NC State kind of took advantage of this, I guess, a few years back when Dorn got there. And they would kind of live in the evaluation range. And look, I'll say this about North Carolina players too. The blue chippers sometimes tend to have a little, at certain positions, tend to have a little higher bust rate. The three stars, not to the extent of South Carolina, but there are dudes that can be found in the three-star range in the state of North Carolina. If you look at NC State a few years ago and all those guys that they put in the NFL, a lot of them were three-star kids from North Carolina. A famous example is Jaire Alexander, three-star kid from North Carolina. I mean, I still think Juwan Howell's impact on Carolina football is to be written. The story is to be written. It's to be determined. He's from North Carolina. He was a zero star. Torricelli Simpkins is in the NFL. He was from North Carolina. No stars from the Charlotte area. So there's players to be found. It's too big of a state not to. But in fairness, that's what it is. And back to NC State, they kind of live in the two star range. But man, it's you got to go. All right. So I'm looking at the rivals. And look, the rankings could be wrong, right? And Josh Dobson, I don't know that it's, I think it's technically honest, maybe intellectually a little dishonest to talk about, how the in-state schools in North Carolina should have gotten Dobson considering he just crossed the border. But even if you take him out, he's the number one player in that state technically this year. And the historical record with recruiting will reflect that. So we'll count him for these purposes. Although I think he's more like a South Carolina kid, just to be straight. But you sort of look at it, and it's the rivals industry top whatever. Josh Dobson, Carolina. Jackson Dollar from Denver, North Carolina, tight end going to Georgia, number two. Number three, Rashad Streets from Raleigh, Oregon. Xavier Hassan, a corner from Cardinal Gibbons in Raleigh, Notre Dame. We know A.J. Randle from Garner, North Carolina, the big linebacker, Miami. Wow. Davion Jones is sixth. He's going to Carolina. Archer seventh. He's going to Carolina. Another Raleigh kid, Quentin Cyphers. These are kids from the Research Triangle, Ohio State. Lincoln linebacker, Jalathian Mayfield, Indiana. We know about Nate Komba from Charlotte, number 10, Auburn. Number 11, Antoine McCoy. We know about him. He visited Carolina from St. Paul's over in the eastern part of the state, Georgia. Safety, Marquise Bryant, also from Rollsville. I don't know that Carolina was in on him too heavy or not. Again, they're being selective as far as the defensive back goes. He's going to Kentucky. Amir Brown's 13th. He's a running back, also from Rollsville, Nebraska. And then Brody from Rollsville, number 14, Carolina. Andrew Rogers, a defense, an edge, big upside guy, East Carolina. Anthony Roberts, also from Rollsville, Virginia Tech. Xavier Perkins from Durham, Jordan, where Noah Clark came from, Virginia Tech. So here's the first in-state Power Four. ECU got the 15th kid. King Kalama from Fafftown, North Carolina, Reagan High School, Duke. So he's 18th. He got to go to 18th, and that's Duke. Marjay Thompson from Shelby Crest, 19th, going to Florida State. Trey Gathers, who the Gamecocks recruited, going to the Gators of Florida. Josiah Fields, 21st. Gamecocks ran on him, backed off. He's going to Louisville. Knightdale, North Carolina, Clayton High School, AJ Cremmell, a big corner. Looks like NC State or Georgia Tech. Looks like NC State. That may be. So you got to go to 22nd. Where are the Tar Heels? Well, and I'm not saying this to bag on North Carolina's recruiting. I'm just saying that there's two things at play. Number one, if you're South Carolina and you want to kind of make, your school the hot place for North Carolina kids to go, because it makes sense. North Carolina kids, when they leave the state, they kind of, for whatever reason, trend towards big brands. A lot of them care about NIL a lot. And they tend to grab, even before there was NIL, they gravitate toward the bigger brands. Notre Dame does a really good job. And again, they got another one out of North Carolina. Ohio State does a good job down there. Georgia has done a good job. And there's gonna be certain kids that, South Carolina, until they win big, it's just gonna be a little too less, not big enough brand for them. And then there's the others that are interested that would like to stay close to home but want to play big time football. Clemson has made a living on kids like this through the years. If you look back, Clemson didn't always get everybody out of North Carolina, but they got studs, the right ones, and brought them down. So if you're South Carolina, number one, you want to kind of win and get in the brand game, and your staff has to work. To make those inroads and build those relationships. And quite frankly, they have. It's been a long process. It's not like Will Muschamp didn't recruit well in Charlotte and other parts of North Carolina. They absolutely got guys out of there. But, the big time dudes from North Carolina almost all either left the state or they stayed at home, went to UNC, and then some went to NC State, just in fairness. But, so you look at it now, and with the Tar Heels kind of doing whatever they're doing, that takes some competition away. Now, you're still going to have to beat the entire country, but you're close. And then you've built those relationships. So that's why it started to turn. And check this out. Let's go back to the 2024 class, Donovan Darden. And that's kind of where the dam broke. They also got Brian Rowe, a four-star out of Charlotte. And of course, he's at UCLA now. And Tayshaun Austin also left the program. But, they got three that year, and that was kind of the breakthrough. Darden, top 10 prospect in the state, blue chipper, Number seven overall in the state. So 172 nationally, 17 at Edge. He's a linebacker, of course, at Carolina. So then the next cycle is when it really started going. And you know, we call North Carolina and South Carolina D-line heaven, and a lot of these are defensive linemen. And so Andrew Harris was, and these are all top 20 prospects within the state, in a state the size of North Carolina, 12 million people. That, you know, you kind of look at the rankings right now, you're growing all the way down to like 47 to 50, and kids are still on Power Four commit list. So it is a pretty deep state. So top 20 is pretty good. Andrew Harris is a, you know, first year linebacker at Carolina, 413 nationally, inside the top 500. 400 is usually pretty good. 45th at his position, linebacker, and 19th in the state. Noah Clark, who we've talked about ad nauseum, from another defensive lineman from D-line heaven. D tackle, 15th in the state. Durham Jordan, 320 overall, 34 in the defensive tackles nationally, and 15 again in the state. If there are 33 defensive tackles, first year defensive tackles in college football this year better than Noah Clark, then it's a great year at D tackle. I'm not complaining too much about the evaluations there at all, really, because I get it. I mean, I totally get it. You kind of look at guys that are big, and you have to be careful with them, because some of them, they don't lean up or whatever. You know, Kazi Barnes is probably going to be in the two deep this year, corner for Greensboro Grimsley, last class, 2026. I said Darden for the 2024 class. He's 2025. I'm sorry, after the 24 season. So this is 26. Freshman, what we call freshman. We used to call freshman this year. 11th, 193rd nationally overall, 27th at corner. Aiden Harris was fifth in the state, 95th overall, ninth at D tackle. And Aiden is going to play this year at a fantastic spring for a freshman. He's getting there. He's got quickness, natural strength, kind of overshadowed maybe by Noah Clark, who's probably about 60 pounds. Noah Clark is so rare. And then Aiden. Yeah, you've got a lot of guys: Kelby Collins, Tomawa, Nadura Jaye, Troy Pikes, at that kind of quote unquote athletic position. And you know, they don't always, it's not like cut and dry that it's always big one athletic. So that was a great haul. That was a breakthrough haul from North Carolina. Well, this year it's gotten even better. If you count Dobson, who's number one, and you know, one of the highest, I think, outside of Zach, is it Zach Pickens? Zach Pickens and Jadeveon and Clowney, highest rated defensive player South Carolina signed in the modern recruiting era. Depending on where Ricardo Hurley was ranked, I think Hurley was ranked 15th back in the day. But definitely the highest ranked defensive back, 12 nationally. Number one in the state, number three at corner nationally. I don't know who's ahead of him. The kid out of Long Beach Poly going to Miami is, I know that, just like by one spot. Davion Jones is sixth in the state of North Carolina, 139th overall, ninth at safety. Big John Archer, Big John, Fayetteville, North Carolina, 71st defensive tackle, 164th overall, 17th at D tackle. Like I said, seventh in the state. So that's three top tens. So South Carolina signed a top 10 prospect out of North Carolina the last three cycles. That's pretty good. And then Jaden Brody, he's top 15 in the state, actually ranked one spot ahead right now of where Noah Clark finished. 444th overall nationally, 43rd at Edge. You know, so that's saying something right there. You know, and South Carolina under Beamer, you know, they did massively well in Maryland, D.C., where they're still recruiting. They're still fighting the good fight up there. They've made serious inroads in Virginia, Darius Gray, and then they flipped Avion Lewis. That's Beamer's home state. You know, that's extra. That's different. The previous few staffs did not recruit Maryland, D.C., Virginia with any kind of consistent success. There were some assistants under Spurrier that really tried hard and got some dudes working their way up and down. but it just wasn't in the cards, and that's fine. You know, Muschamp, they'd work that part of it, you know, but they also a lot of Georgia, a lot of South Carolina, that kind of thing. But Beamer's really expanded the recruiting footprint, and working north south, I've always thought was brilliant for South Carolina. You're the closest SEC school up and down the I-95 corridor. The Power Four programs in North Carolina, Virginia are in flux in many ways. James Franklin's making it a little bit harder in Virginia right now. You know, Maryland fights the good fight with local kids, and Mike Loxley is a really good recruiter, we have to say. But that's not competition. The problem in Maryland and DC is you got all the Big Ten. It's close enough to the Big Ten footprint because Maryland's now a Big Ten school, and Penn State's always recruited there, so is Ohio State, that they'll you start fighting the other conference there. But I still think, you know, with Dylan Stewart and Nick Harbor at South Carolina's always going to have a seat at the table if they push for DC kids inside the Beltway up there. But North Carolina, you almost had to skip over it, right? Because there was just no sizzle up there. And Shane Beamer, Clayton White, who is a North Carolina native who went to NC State, Travian Robertson is from North Carolina. You know, there's no reason why you shouldn't be recruiting up there. But it's always been one of those things for the University of South Carolina where it's easier said than done. And that seems to be changing. You know, it's one thing to have a cycle where, oh, well, North Carolina fired its coach and we got four or five guys from up there and they all ended up being good. It's quite another to start stacking blue chippers out of the top 10 from that state. And it's not easy. Like I said, a lot of those kids in North Carolina just want to go wherever. Give me the biggest brand, the biggest bag, let's go. But, you know, you start talking about what's going on in the Tar Heel State. And the ideal goal, obviously, would be because of the amount of people, almost 20 million people in North and South Carolina combined. If you combine the NFL numbers of both Carolinas, you would have a, like into one state, let's just say it was one state, Carolina, you would have a state that would produce as much NFL talent as probably more than Georgia, maybe a little less than Georgia. And, you know, it would be a no-brainer for any serious school located within the borders to be good at football. I don't know. So see, the geography of University of South Carolina is probably to its advantage. Plus, in the eastern part of the state and of North Carolina and, you know, all the way over to Charlotte, US 74 corridor, South Carolina's closer in a lot of ways, in a lot of areas to a lot of points in North Carolina, you know, the research triangle notwithstanding. So anyway, that's kind of Jaden Brody and the big picture recruiting deal from the state of North Carolina. This has been JC Sherbert on the 5th of July. Gamecock fans, again, hope you had a great one. We'll be back this week. Well, we're not going to be back this week on ITG. ITG, I got some clarification. It will be July 20th, which will be the first day of SEC Media Days. That's when we come back. But I'll be popping in. Matt Anderson will be popping in. Some other people will be popping in from time to time to talk a little Gamecock football, of course, as we always do. All right. I'm JC. It's been fun, folks. I'm out. Holla.